Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Between Floors by W.R. Gingell. Narrated by Zara Jane Narqui. 1. You'd think I'd know better by now. You'd think I'd know not to poke my nose into stuff that isn't my business. Not to go following strange blokes, if it comes to that. I mean, he wasn't really a strange bloke. His name was Detective Tuatu. I'd worked on a case with him before, and he knew I was following him. I was a bit bored, and I knew he was up to something, so of course I stuck to him and wouldn't let him go alone. It doesn't sound so bad. It's just curiosity, right? It's not like it's got me nearly killed or anything. Hang on. Actually, it kind of has. Nearly killed, nearly turned into a werewolf, sorry, lycanthrope, they're really fussy about that, and nearly vanished away in a way that I still don't fully understand. Not to mention that right now I was trapped between with a panicking cop attached to my hand and no way of knowing if I was going in the right direction or not. Oh, hang on, you don't know what between is, do you? There are layers to reality. Like, trifle and... Nah, I'll explain later. Right now, we were somewhere not quite in the fey world, but not quite in the human world either. A kind of betweenish area that still had a bit of floral to it from the wallpaper of the room we'd been in a couple of minutes ago, and a whole lot of menace in it that definitely came from the fey side of things. "Follow me," I said to the detective. The world was all greenery and dangerous silence around us, and I didn't like the way my words were swallowed up in the stuffiness of that greenery. "Don't let go of my hand. Watch out for goblins and don't touch stuff." Goblins? Detective Tuatu still looked a bit dazed, the whites of his eyes a bit bigger than usual. I wouldn't have been able to notice it so much if it wasn't so gloomy in here and his skin wasn't so dark. "They're the little mongrels with needles. One of them got you that night you came after us into the house across the road." "That reminds me," said the detective, sounding a bit strained. "The house disappeared that night." "Yeah." "How?" "Don't you reckon you've got enough problems right here and now without trying to bring up ones from the past as well?" I asked him. I mean, if that was his way of coping with the panic, fair enough. It didn't make much sense to me, though. "What's this stuff?" he asked, reaching up to touch a floating bit of moss that drifted by too close for comfort. "Don't touch stuff," I reminded him, "and don't let go of my hand. What did I just tell you?" "Why? Isn't it moss?" "Maybe, maybe not." I threw a look around. "Just don't let go, all right?" "All right," he said. He didn't sound very grateful, but I suppose there's a difference between a hulking great wall of muscled safety like Zero telling you not to let go and someone as skinny as me doing it. "You don't know Zero. I'll explain that later too." I set my shoulders. "First things first," I said impressively, and peeked down at my phone again. There hadn't been a signal before, but there was now. Well, that wasn't suspicious at all. Detective Tuatu didn't look impressed. "What?" "Reckon I'm going to try to call Zero." "Thank goodness." "Oi!" "Pet," he said. "We're trapped in some sort of hell dimension and..." "It's creepy, but it's not like anything's trying to kill you," I protested. "Not yet, anyway. Calling it a hell dimension's a bit much, isn't it?" "That makes me feel much better," said Tuatu. But he managed not to roll his eyes, which was pretty impressive. But that was a dead body back there. And if I'm right about just a very small thing today, it came from in here. I'd rather let the professionals deal with it, and I'm pretty sure that whatever else your three friends are, they're professionals. I don't want to be in here either. "It's not exactly in here," I told him, "and it's not exactly from this bit of here that the body came." I tapped worriedly at the slick surface of my phone, which had blacked out again. It stayed black for just a bit too long, then lit. "Got reception anyway," I said. "That's nice." "That's weird," Tuatu said, but he looked relieved. "That too," I agreed. He had no idea how weird it was. I slowly unlocked my phone, the touch screen cool beneath my fingertips, reluctant to try and call Zero. I was half afraid that instead of his voice, I would hear something else. Something weird and scary. "What did you mean we're not exactly in here?" "There are layers to reality," I said to him, my finger hovering over Zero's number. "The human world, that's the real world, so don't let those three tell you different. The Fey world and the bit between where it can be anything it wants to be." "Where are we then?" asked the detective. He didn't sound less scared, but at least he was listening. "This bit, is it the between bit or a Fey bit? And I don't say that I believe in Fey, but there's definitely something weird about those three, and we're not in my friend's house anymore." "We kinda are," I said. "This bit is between, but it's also your friend's house. Once we start moving, we won't be inside the house anymore, but we'll still be between."
"That doesn't make sense."
"Yeah, sorry." I hesitated for an instant longer, then let the pad of my thumb touch the phone. It lit up, just a bit too late again. "Reckon there's a lag in here?"
"You're the expert," Tuatu pointed out. "Is it ringing?"
"Yeah." The ringing was just a bit too slow, too. But if I'm honest, I reckon there's about a 50% chance that whoever answers won't be Zero. There was a click on the other end of the phone, then silence. "Zero?" I said. "Is that you?"
"Yes," said Zero's voice.
It was too slow, just like everything else to do with the phone between. But I was starting to wonder if that wasn't just because we were between.
"What's wrong with your phone?"
"I might have got caught between with the detective," I said. "But it's not really my fault because someone threw a body at us and there were cops coming out of the woodwork everywhere too. Anyway, we need some help because I don't know which way to go." There was a big silence, and I thought I heard a very carefully let out sigh. If it really was Zero, he was probably pinching his brow about now.
"Listen very carefully," he said. "Can you see anywhere nearby that glimmers?"
"Can we see any glimmers?" I asked the detective. Detective Tuatu looked sideways at me.
"Any what?"
"Glimmers, you know, something that has a bit of a wet glitter to it. Oh, hang on, never mind." There was a patch of dark green shadow through the trees across from us, a place that might have been rock, but wasn't quite rock, with a definite glimmer of moonlight to it. "Yeah, there's something like that here."
"There will be a door there."
"A door?"
"Not exactly a door, but a way through."
"It'll take us out?"
"No, it will take you to another area of between, but that will get you out of the house."
"What do we do once we're out of the house? We can't come out too early or the cops will catch Detective Tuatu."
"Once you're out of the house, I can find you," said Zero's voice. "But you have to get out first, and you won't have reception for much longer."
"Flamin' fantastic," I said. "So we're going to lose contact again."
I should have saved my breath. The next thing I heard was the beep 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 of the call dropping out.
"Flamin' fantastic," I said again. "Lost reception again."
Anxiously, the detective asked, "Do you know what to do?"
"Kinda, maybe."
"What's wrong?"
He gave me directions to get out, I said, slipping my phone back into my pocket. "Out of the house, anyway."
"And that's bad?" Tuatu hazarded dubiously. "How?"
It wasn't that it was bad exactly. It was more that I'd expected Zero to say something terse and bossy like, "Stay where you are, I'm coming." "Just dunno if that was really him," I said. "Dunno if we should follow the directions or not." Detective Tuatu looked toward the rustling trees worriedly.
"What are our options?"
"Well, either it was him and we should do as we're told,
or it wasn't him and we're on our own anyway. Depends on whether you think it's worth the risk or not. Should we see if there's a door there? He suggested. That'll give us an idea of whether what he said is true or not anyway. Yeah, I said slowly. There was something else bothering me, and I didn't know what it was. I didn't like that, but the trees were starting to sound like they were about to uproot and walk toward us, and I liked that idea a heck of a lot less. Come on, let's get it over with. It's not as reassuring holding on to someone when you're the one leading into danger, but Detective Tuatu's hand was still a bit of a comfort. Not so much because I thought he'd be much good in a fight, but because I had to be brave and couldn't run away if he was depending on me. I'd still much rather have been holding on to Zero's hand, but if I couldn't be, at least I still knew what I needed to do. Tuatu followed me gingerly between the trees, and it might have been the breeze that suddenly stirred around, but it almost looked like the weeping willows actually reached out for us as we passed, trailing fronds languidly through the air. "Better get a wriggle on," I muttered, pulling him along a bit quicker. I'd just come to the unpleasant realization that the wind wasn't causing the stirring of the willow fronds. The fronds were stirring up a sticky, slow breeze with their movement. Detective Tuatu obeyed without hesitation, crowding on my heels as the glimmering rocky surface came within touching distance. I put my hand out to it, expecting to feel mossy, slick rock, and felt something soft and cobwebby that gave a bit beneath my palm instead. I prodded at it, and my hand went through softly, silkily. "Well, I wouldn't call it a door, but I suppose Zero knows what he's talking about," I said. "Wait here, gonna try it." "What's the point of me waiting?" Tuatu asked, his voice dry. "If it's a trap, I might as well get trapped with you than get left by myself in here. I'll likely die either way."
"Aren't you cheerful?" I muttered. But there wasn't much use talking about it, because he was right.
I pushed right into the glimmery whiteness and felt it press against my face for an instant before it allowed me through. Body, hand, Tuatu and all. I smelled rain and stone as soon as my nose broke the cobwebby surface, and maybe my training had been good for something after all. I was already looking around for needle-wielding goblins when Detective Tuatu began to exit. There weren't any. We were in a cave sort of area that was very different from the place we'd come from.
"Hey," I said in surprise, "it is the way out."
Detective Tuatu threw an unimpressed look around.
"The way out of what? It doesn't look much better out here. It doesn't look like an out here either, if it comes to that."
"Yeah," I agreed, looking around at the glistening rocky shadows around us. There was even less light here than there had been in the house behind us, but the darkness was of a different quality here. Instead of the stuffiness that felt like it could swallow us up, there was a cool, pleasant feel to the air, like there was a cave opening up further, letting in fresh air to feed the greenery that crawled all over the rocks and made every crevasse and crack deep green. I felt the breeze touch my face, fresh and cool, and smelled the distant scent of wet concrete. This wasn't a cave. This was an underpass. I said without hesitation, "This way!" I still wasn't entirely sure that it had been Zero on the phone, and I wanted to make sure that we got out of between as soon as we could, whether or not he was waiting for us.
"What are you looking for?" asked Tuatu as I pulled him along.
"Nothing," I said, but I didn't stop looking around me. It was too hard to explain that I was looking for things that weren't exactly the things they were pretending to be, or that they were here. Somewhere nearby, in the human version of this area, I was certain there was an exit from the underpass. Maybe we could get out there if I could see things clearly as they were in the human world instead of how they were here between. For instance, not too far behind us, there was an outcropping of rock that suggested the idea of a car bumper if you looked at it in the right way. I stopped, squinted, and opened my mouth to ask the detective if he thought it looked a bit like a car bumper too, when something moved out in the murky distance of the craggy cave floor. "I think there are people out there," said the detective, and I didn't blame him for the nervous sound to his voice. I was flaming scared myself, because I knew they weren't human. First it was one head popping up over the rocks, a spot of light on its forehead that made a soft glow around it. Then the rocks around us were filled with gleams of light, scruffy heads and hoods popping up from the crags. "G'day," I said to the biped who had arrived first. It tilted its head at me. It was only a small thing, about thigh high on me, and it was vaguely human-esque if you had a preference for little tackers with big mouths and bulbous eyes. They were mucky little things too. I couldn't tell if they were male or female with the amount of mud they had slathered all over them. No wonder we hadn't seen them until they turned on their lights. They blended right into the cave surroundings. I threw a quick look behind us to see if we could get back to the door if we needed to, but there were more of the little beggars behind us. A lot more. "Pet," said Detective Tuatu at the same time, "there's more of them." "Yep. Saw that," I said, trying not to sound worried. Little lights were blinking into being all around us, and I didn't like the way we were being edged forward, even if the little tackers in front of us were smiling encouragingly. It was like being towed along by a wave further into the ocean, somewhere you didn't know if you'd meet a beautiful reef or a shark. "What are they?" "Dunno," I said. I felt like I was saying that a lot today. "They don't look dangerous, do they?" I looked around at the mucky little tackers suspiciously. In my experience, stuff not looking dangerous and not actually being dangerous were two very different, potentially deadly things. "Goblins don't look real dangerous either," I told him. One of the little cave people poked me in the hip and made me jump. "What?" I demanded. It made an encouraging hand flap at me, urging me forward. It wasn't like we could go back anyway, so I said reluctantly, "We might as well go with them for a bit, keep them happy for the time being. We'll try to slip away when we get closer to the exit." I tried to make a mental note of where I'd seen the bit of rock that could have been a car bumper, but I'd already lost it in the movement of muddy cave people, so I kept my eye out for anything that could be used as a weapon instead. That was another bit of my training that was starting to come in handy, because I could already see a couple of stalagmites that looked like cricket bats if I looked at them in the right way, and I was pretty sure we'd be passing close by them very soon. They were still looking enough like cricket bats when we passed that I could reach out and grab them. I passed one to Tuatu, who looked first grateful, then confused, and kept the other for myself. The little tackers who were herding us gibbered at me a bit, and I wondered if there was something about hearing that could be influenced by between two, because it almost felt as though I understood them. Well, almost felt as though I almost understood them. It was as if they were saying, "Rude, nasty, rude," at me, but in another language that I'd learned a couple of years ago and was just remembering now. I was pretty sure it was "rude, nasty, rude" they were saying at me anyway, even though I didn't know exactly how I knew it. I kept a good grip on my bat anyway. There were too many of them, and I wanted to have a weapon. They were good cricket bats too, light and a little bit flexible. I wondered if I'd pinched them from some rich kid's car as we passed through and grinned a bit. Maybe Zero could help me put them back in the right place when this was all over. Or maybe stuff made its way back to where it should be if you tossed it back between. I mean, I doubted it, but it wouldn't hurt to ask. The cave started to grow a bit lighter around us as we walked. It wasn't lighter in a daylight kind of way, though, which was disappointing. It was lighter in an amber, flickery sort of way that suggested there was a fire up ahead. Actually, it was a couple of fires. We came around the curve of the cave wall, and there it was below us, a valley as big as a sports oval, with soft, mossy bits all through it,
mossy bits, logs and very large fires.
You lot wouldn't be so cold if you didn't go around with mud all over yourselves, I told them. One of them shook a finger at me and said something that probably had a negative in it, then patted its stomach.
Oh, right. Each of the fires had a decent-sized cauldron sitting over it. They must be communal feeders or something. Not like Jin Young, then. I'd have to ask him if vampires ever had parties. Come to think of it, I probably didn't want to know.
Beside me, the detective stopped walking. I wondered why, until I realised that I'd stopped walking and that I still had him by the hand. Good, good. I was doing a good job as protector. The little tackers began to chitter again, and one of them poked me in the ribs. Dunno how it reached that high, but it made me jump again, so I glared at it and shook my finger in its face. Don't do that! Something yelled from across the valley, sharp and demanding. There was a wizened old prune standing by the biggest cauldron below, and as I looked, it waved the ladle at us in a vaguely threatening kind of way. I swung my cricket bat a bit against the grass-like stuff beneath our feet and wondered if that was a rock formation behind the old prune or if it was a really big tacker down there. The old prune turned around and bashed at the rock, and the sound echoed across the valley. When it finally stopped, there was an even louder crack. Something that definitely wasn't rock stood up. Dark, craggy, and as implacable as the cave walls around us, the creature towered, dwarfing the old prune, the fire, and even the hill behind it. "That's not rock," said Tuatu, with the feverish sort of voice that seems to be trying to convince itself that what it sees isn't right. "That's not rock! That's a person! A troll!" "Your guess is as good as mine," I said. For all I knew, it could have been a troll. The old prune by the cauldron pointed the ladle at us and made a gibber that I thought might be something like, "Off you go, then?" Behind us, the little tackers swarmed and pushed, and despite how small they were, I felt myself being forced forward a step from the sheer amount of them. Detective Tuatu asked, "What are they planning on doing with us? I don't see any weapons." "Dunno," I said. I didn't want to hurt anyone who wasn't trying to hurt me, but I hadn't yet met anything between that hadn't been after my blood. Except the plants, I suppose. And just because we couldn't see weapons, it didn't mean they didn't have them. Didn't mean they needed weapons, if it came to that. I leaned back into the swarm, making a bit freer with my elbow than I'd had before, and swung the cricket bat to make a clearing behind us as well. I didn't want to be too rough with them. They were only small, but I didn't want to be pushed toward that big brute before I knew exactly what he wanted us for. Detective Tuatu looked down uneasily at the cricket bat I'd given him, then around at the muttering swarm, and I knew he was thinking the same as me. "I can't, if they're not trying to hurt us, I can't..." "Yeah, I know," I said, "but I bet they're gonna try to hurt us." "How do you know?" "We're between. Everything here wants to kill or maim humans. It's like a cultural thing." "Oh, where did the bats come from, before?" "Dunno," I said again. "They were already here, sorta, and they're sort of not exactly bats. Well, here they're not usually bats. Here they're usually stalagmites. I just convinced them they're bats because we needed bats." "Makes perfect sense," said Tuatu. He was looking a bit sick again. "What are they saying?"
"I don't speak the language," I objected. "I just wander in every now and then and get out before someone tries to kill me."
But as before, there was something familiar about the gibbering. If I didn't listen to it too closely, it almost made sense, like the book titles in Zero's bookshelf, which were written in a strange script that only made sense when you weren't trying to decipher them. I stopped listening so hard, concentrating on swinging my own cricket bat back and forth with one hand and feeling the flick, flick, flick as the top of it lightly swatted grass. That was hard, because the big brute from the middle of the valley started walking toward us, loosening his shoulders as he came, and I didn't think he was doing that to limber up to shake our hands.
"Pet," said Detective Tuatu, the tip of his bat dropping to the ground.
"Shh," I admonished him. "Trying to hear over here." The conversation around the cook pot rose in the air, a steady cackle of appreciative, tongue-smacking talk, above which bubbled the suggestion of, "Fatten it up a bit." "No, I like it tough. Young and tender. Ah, human flesh."
"Ah, heck."
And up the hill toward us, Big Brute kept walking, his ridiculously long stride eating up the space between us, while the little chirpers behind us crowded in closer, cutting off escape from the back again.
"Oh, heck."
"Reckon they want to eat us," I said. He wasn't carrying a weapon, Big Brute, but looking at the size of him and looking at the size of us, I didn't think it was going to matter too much.
Where was Zero?
I couldn't call him on the phone again. Probably hadn't called him in the first place if my suspicions were correct, and I was pretty sure that yelling for him wasn't going to do us much good either. Only Athelas had said something about a tracker trace, hadn't he? And there had been that time just a couple of nights ago when I'd screamed for Zero and he'd shown up. Coincidence? Maybe, but maybe not. Tuatu's grip tightened convulsively on the handle of his bat. They want to eat us? Big Brute stopped a few yards away from us and stooped for a stone as big as my head. Behind us, a current of meaning rippled through the chirpers. Tenderize it, smash it, soften it up.
"Oh yeah," I said, "they're definitely going to eat us. You still don't want to fight?"
"Oh no," said Tuatu, lifting his bat with a look of fascinated horror. "I'll fight."
"Cool," I said, "and if it looks like we're going to die, yell out for Zero."
I don't really remember how the fight started. There was a staticky sort of pause where I thought I might be really close to wetting my pants, and things got muggy and prickly like a hot summer day. Then I was screaming and swinging and maybe dying, with blood in my eyes and something liquid in my lungs that burned. Big Brute swung and missed because I had been there, and suddenly I wasn't there anymore, faster than it was possible for a human not to be there, and...
heck yeah! I still had my vampire reflexes!
Long story, nearly turned into a lycanthrope, had to swallow some vampire spit. Don't worry about it. Important thing was, I still had my vampire reflexes! Things slowed down a bit, even though my lungs still burned. Tuatu, where was Tuatu? I saw him, swinging and swearing, already bloody and battered. But as soon as I saw him, he went flying, knocked into the cave wall by an arm as huge and rocky as the wall he hit. Things got very fast again, and somehow I was screaming and hitting again, bashing Big Brute's ear as hard as I could. How the flaming heck did I get up here? Then the world spun around me and hit me very hard. Someone was groaning like they were dying. Probably me. I saw the cave roof above me, fractured into 1,000 pieces. Or maybe I hit the ground so hard that my eyes broke, I don't know. And Big Brute's craggy face. Face, then hand. A hand that still held a rock as big as my head, now poised above me. Oh, heck, where was my cricket bat? I turned my head, blinking to clear my sight, and saw it just out of reach in the muddy churned grass. Oh, heck. Something else was missing. Where was Tuatu? I looked for him, but saw only splotches of red flung in an arc through the muddy stuff on my cricket bat. I could see them really clearly, and somehow the cricket bat seemed more important than the rock poised above my head, ready to dash out my brains. "Pet," asked a whisper, a deep rumble in the ground, and the world became real and painful around me again.
"Zero!" I yelled. "Zero!"
The air did something weird that twanged over my head, and Big Brute froze, rock raised. A dirty hand slapped over my mouth, big and smelly and human, and a voice muttered in my ear, "Shh, shh, ladies can't be noisy here." I dug my head into the sandy ground, tilting back to see who it was.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?